Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelt. The guy to my left is Paul Dottino. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. And Thursday, well, sometimes it's Wednesday, today it'll be Thursday, we turn the page from the week before to the upcoming game, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles, of course. If you want to call in and talk about the game last week, we'll certainly take your calls and talk about anything you want to talk about. But, Paul, let's start the show by talking about this game against Philly. I spent the morning watching Philly's defense the first two games this year, and I went back and I watched the half against us last year, and the same thing struck me about the Eagles that struck me about the Lions last week. And let me explain to you what I mean. When I watched the Lions tape in their first game of the year, and I'm trying to remember who they played against, and it's not
Cardinals
for me. They played the Cardinals, thank you. They played a ton of single high safety, had 7-8 guys in the box because of why? David Johnson.
Then got injured.
Exactly. But they were concerned about stopping the run. Yet, last week, if you look at the game the Giants played against the Lions, what was their alignment on every single play?
They copycatted the Cowboys defense.
Two safeties deep, which is Sterling Shepard said to you after the game against the Lions, is the same thing people have been copycatting from last year. And when you look at the Eagles game against the Giants in Week 16 last year, you have a couple plays here and there where they go into single high, and you see Malcolm Jenkins kind of come to tight end man-on-man a little bit. You know, they had two safeties deep most of the time. Thank you for the water.
Thank you, Dave. And
it's something the Giants are going to have to figure out a way to get teams out of. And I'm not sure this is the week that it's going to happen with the run game, because the Eagles' run defense is, quite frankly, excellent.
No, it won't happen with the run game, because the Giants don't have much of a run game right now, and the Eagles are good at it because they are so terrific up front. That's not how to do it, John.
Well, ideally it is how to do it.
But not in this instance.
Correct.
In this instance, the only way for the Giants to break that zone is to hit a big play early. You remember the bomb to Marshall in the second half? It was there. Eli had the time. He put the ball exactly where it wanted to be. Marshall beat the coverage, and the ball went through his hands. How about the bomb to Ingram late in the game with about 4.5 minutes to go, and Eli throws it long down the left sideline, and the ball's right there, and Ingram catches it, and then he gets whacked by Slay, and the ball comes free. The play was there to be made. Those kinds of plays, they need to take some of those shots in the first quarter. That's how you will get the defense starting to think. That's how they will be a little off balance. That's how they'll be a little bit on their heels. And let me tell you, with three of the top six defensive backs for the Eagles probably not playing in this game because of injury, the Giants need to be able to do that early. That's the way to do it, John.
And I took a look at that first half of the game last year when the Giants played the Eagles, and they actually had some opportunities in the first half of that game to make some plays. Sterling Shepard dropped the pass over the middle. Eli Manning did not get the ball to Odell Beckham's outside shoulder on a streak pass down the left sideline where Jenkins came over and helped him knock the ball away. But if the ball is thrown further to the outside, it's a catch. There was another play where a player was open deep and the pass didn't go his way. So I didn't think Eli played particularly well in the first half of the game against Philly last year. That was also the first half where he threw the pick over the middle when they undercut the slant route. So between Eli throwing the ball and then, of course, like you mentioned, Brandon Marshall last week, the receivers catching the ball, and quite frankly, the receivers getting open, because there were plenty of plays last week where Eli had time and guys weren't separating and getting open. Those are the things that need to happen early in this game, because you're right. And I will not, and I promise you folks this, you will not hear me say this again until the Giants actually do it. And I'm not saying it now, I'm giving it as a for example. The Eagles secondary can be beat. They have injuries. They're not a great cover team. We've also said this about five or six teams over the Giants' last 9 or 10 games, and it never seems to come to fruition. So I'm not going to say that, because let's get to the crux of the matter then, Paul. Can they hold their own? I'm not even saying beat. Can they hold their own against an Eagles front that's very impressive? Fletcher Cox inside, Brandon Graham, Vinnie Curry, Derek Barnett. They blitz a little bit from the safety and linebacker position. I wouldn't expect them to do that much against the Giants, but they have so far this year. Can the Giants hold up enough to take advantage of that secondary?
The Eagles will go into this game and they will say, Giants, we dare you to go deep. We don't think that you will. We think you're intimidated about it because you think that our pass rush is going to get in there so quickly that Eli won't have time to throw it.
And we will.
That's their philosophy.
And we'll dare you to block our four guys. We're not going to bother blitzing. We're going to make you block four.
No question. That will be the Eagles' defensive philosophy on Sunday. I can telegraph that to you right now at 12:10 on Thursday morning. Okay, Thursday afternoon.
Can the Giants beat it? That's the question.
It's about not being afraid to beat it. That's the problem. You have to philosophically go into it and say, we're not going to be intimidated by this philosophy. We understand that that's the Eagles playing to their strength and our weakness. But if you're the Giants, you have to say, you know what? We're going to look at Mike Tyson, and we're going to punch Mike Tyson in the nose, and we are going to accept that dare. We're going to call your bluff. We do have the receivers that can beat your secondary, and we're going to prove it to you in the first quarter, and then let's see how tough you are with the rest of your game plan. That's what needs to be done, John. Now, there's no other questions to be asked.
There is an execution aspect to it, though.
I think the Giants can execute it.
Well, you have to have enough time to run those plays. You know, if the Eagles, and quite frankly, if the Eagles' safeties play really wide near the numbers and you can't get it over the tops of the receivers, then it's going to be something in the middle of the field. So it's not quite as easy as saying we're going to do this no matter what. You do have to protect long enough, and the coverage has to be right to find the player in the right spot.
Look at the skill set of the Giants' skill position players, and look at the skill set of the remaining Eagles who are going to be playing in this game, specifically Raul Douglas, who plays off coverage. That's all he knows. He's a rookie. All he knows is off coverage.
Yeah, but, Paul, we've been saying this about opposing secondaries for months.
And the Giants never seem to attack those folks early in the game. They wait until they're behind. And when you wait until you're behind, you're giving the defense an extra edge because they can cheat against what you're going to try to do as you climb the mountain. If you do it early, before you get into the hole, it evens the playing field and gives your guys a chance to go mano a mano, our talent against your talent, our receivers against your secondary. It can be done. And furthermore, I'm going to tell you this. I wouldn't even go three wides to do it. I would say you could do it with double tight ends because Ingram could go out and wind up running those deep routes.
Down the seam, absolutely.
And Ellison could stay in and help chip the pass rusher who might come free against Manning. This is not rocket science here. This is simply going back to the old Ron Airhart, Bill Parcells days and picking off some stuff from the 80s and saying, okay, it's old school football, all right? Enough with the video game football that the NFL has become. Let's go back to the core principles of what the NFL was built on.
Well, in fairness, it hasn't been video game football the first 2 weeks with all the lack of scoring
around
the league.
No, the joystick has been broken.
Yes, it has been. That's correct. And a lot of the reasons the joystick has been broken is because teams can't win offensively in the trenches and quarterbacks aren't getting protection and things of that nature. All right, let's touch on one other thing with the Giants offense before we flip to the other side of the ball real quick, folks. No word from practice yet. It doesn't look like from the media that's out there about who was on the field and who wasn't.
We are allowed to discuss that, are we not?
But do we know who was out there yet?
Yes.
I wasn't out there yet.
I can tell you.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
On the bike.
Thank you, Paul.
Bobby Hart on the bike. JT Thomas on the bike. BJ Goodson on the bike. Janoris Jenkins not on the practice field.
He wasn't out there at all.
He wasn't out there at all yesterday either,
correct?
Correct.
I know. You got fooled by the JT Thomas hair yesterday on the bike on Twitter.
Initially, I did.
Yes, you did. I saw that.
And then immediately pulled it down.
Yeah, I did see that.
Because the hair thing really threw me for a loop.
No, it's tricky.
Those dreads were flopping as he was doing the bike. And I'm like, okay, that's Jenkins. And I was like, well, he had his jersey curled up.
There was no number that you could see.
Couldn't see the number. All I saw were the dreads. And the dreads.
You automatically think Jenkins, I understand.
So that's how that happened. But we pulled it down real quick and made sure we got it right for everybody. But that's what you need to know. And then as far as Odell Beckham is concerned, he's out there during the media portion doing what he usually does, runs around a lot. And we'll find out
from the head coach whether he was full or limited when Ben McAdoo talks to the media or the coordinators talk to the media today, not Ben McAdoo around 135.
So that's your report from the open part of practice.
So that brings me to the last point I was going to make about the Giants' offense, and that's the offensive line in terms of how you think guys are going to set up. The fact that Bobby Hart's second day of practice still not going, that's probably not a great sign for Sunday. I wouldn't rule him out yet, but not a good sign. Assuming he's not going to be able to go, would you think they would send out the same set up as they did after Hart got hurt last week with Pugh at right tackle and Jones at left guard?
Justin Pugh seemed to think so yesterday when he talked to the media. He said, you know, I got to think that Bobby Hart's going to be ready, but if not, I'm certainly ready to go and play right tackle. So as far as he seems to be mentally concerned, he's approaching it as if he's going to have to go out there and do it.
And I will say this. This is a bit of a bad luck situation for the Giants in this case, because those two switches now is going up against the Eagles' two best pass-rushing defensive linemen. Now, Fletcher Cox is also going to line up over right guard, too, over John Jerry. Mm-hmm. He moves in both spots. Mm-hmm. He will play both left and right defensive tackle. But Brandon Graham's over the right tackle spot. So if it's Jones and Pugh, they're going to be challenged this week, and they're going to have a big responsibility.
Actually, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they flop them all around.
Oh, yeah.
You're the Eagles. You're going to move them all around. You're not going to keep them in one spot.
Ironically, two of Fletcher Cox's sacks this year has actually come one on a zone blitz where he ended up rushing outside against the tackle, and another stunt where he beat the right tackle. So he's actually, his two of his sacks have come on blocking situation where he's gone up against the right tackle and still gotten to the quarterback.
See, here's what's really rough about the Eagles front. They can pull guys like Derek Barnett and Chris Long off the bench.
Yeah, they're not bad.
Okay? They will literally rotate eight guys on their defensive front. And that means, John, every one of them is running on a full tank of gas
Correct.
On every play.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes a big problem.
And they are told to get up the field. Much like when you
no
play
question.
Against Dallas. Now, Dallas will use more stunts than Philly will. But their job is the defensive linemen in Dallas are not told to build a wall and, you know, stop the run. They're told to get up field. The Eagles defensive linemen, they're told, get up field.
That's known as playing the run on your way to the quarterback.
Correct.
Very famous phrase that coaches like to use. So this is a difficult deal for the Giants. In my opinion, again, I'm going back to Ron Ehrhardt when he was coordinator for Parcells. I would make sure that either Ellison or Shane Smith were on the field for every single offensive snap so that there would at least be somebody there if they needed to have that extra chip to help out the O-line, because
I mean,
you have to believe the Eagles are going to be sending a lot of heat from those front four.
I mean, Evan Engram or Perkins or Vereen can chip, right? I mean, you don't ask them to block one-on-one.
Well,
those guys can chip on their way out into a
route. Let's put it this way. Vereen could certainly do it on third down. If you're going to go third down package, you make Vereen the lone setback, he could do it.
And I think if you run out 11 personnel, and you can have Engram chip on the way out into a route, why not?
I like Ellison to do it better.
Well, Ellison will be better at it, but I think...
And I don't want to take a chance with anything less than Ellison.
I mean, all you have to do is put Engram outside one of the tackles to prevent the easy outside rush, and that'll help things.
You could do double tight end.
Sure. Run the, yeah.
But
run
I want Ellison on the field all the time.
That's fair.
He has gotten so much praise from Coach McAdoo for being one of the best all-around talents on this football team. I think he needs to be on the field all the time. He's a vastly underrated player who has tremendous tools. I shouldn't say tremendous tools. He's got all-around tools. He's smart. He's energetic. He's a very, very physical, blue-collar football player. Shane Vereen told me yesterday, and we aired it on, it'll be part of First and 10 on MSG tomorrow night. Vereen said flat out, the best way to combat the Eagles' pass rush is with physicality, because you're not going to outquick them. They're fast. They're aggressive.
Well, they play the wide nine.
And they're running
on
all cylinders on every play because of the massive substitution.
Mm-hmm.
You have to out-physical them. Ellison is one of those guys who's going to get his nose bloody trying to out-physical them, and that's what I want.
Fair enough. All right, let's flip it the other side really quick because I know you guys are holding. I want to get to your calls in just a second. Again, 201-939-4513. But we haven't talked about the Giants' defense yet against the Eagles' offense, and I think we should touch on that.
Mm-hmm.
Carson Wentz has been sacked eight times this year, but from what I've seen, it's more of a product of him trying to hold on to the ball and make big plays and scramble around. Against the Redskins in the first game, he actually was pressured early in that game.
Yes.
And often. It was a little bit better against Kansas City. I haven't watched that full game, though, with their offensive snaps yet. But he's very mobile, much like Matthew Stafford. He's got a big arm, not quite as big as Stafford, but he can get the ball down the field on the move, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's certainly a better quarterback than he was last year. He seems to have taken a few steps in the right direction.
So far.
You still have Zach Ertz. You have Alshon Jeffrey as the addition, a big wide receiver that can win one-on-one. And the Eagles don't run the ball that well.
No.
They really have struggled.
They don't run block either.
They haven't tried to run it a whole lot, let alone run it successfully. So I think that's kind of what you're looking at when you're dealing with Philadelphia.
All right. Jenkins, if he plays, he's one-on-one against Alshon Jeffrey.
And Jenkins generally does well against receivers that rely on physicality.
Correct.
Look at Dez Bryant.
Because Jenkins is a get-in-your-face guy.
Yeah, he is. He doesn't mind mixing it up.
He will not back down.
But Alshon Jeffrey is also 6'4". Janoris Jenkins is 5'11".
He's still, well, Dez has got a pretty good height advantage on him, too.
Is
not
six,
as much
one,
as
6'2"?
6'2", I think.
Okay.
But he's given up some inches.
No
Dez
question.
Will not back, Jenkins will not back down.
Oh,
so
no.
I think you want Jenkins in this game. Really do. However, outside of a missed tackle, I thought Ross Cockrell actually played well the other night.
He got lucky to not get called for a pass interference on that deep pass.
He had some arm.
A little
he had some arm stuff going
yeah,
on that.
Bit.
But having said that, I thought he played well.
I agree.
He was around a receiver.
I thought he played well, too. And that was the thing coming out of Pittsburgh.
Didn't
People
know.
Said he could play man-on-man, bump and run outside, and that's what he did.
Because they didn't play that style.
They play out of zone in Pittsburgh.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So now maybe it's true. The style will make him a much better player. So let me just throw that out there before we do anything else.
Got it.
Now, as far as Wentz is concerned, a couple things about him. Very quick release. He will throw receivers open. But that also means he will throw into traffic.
He will throw interceptions. That's
which
true.
Means you can jump his routes and you can pick him off.
Yes, sir.
Okay? Huge for the Giants. They have to get at least a couple of picks on Wentz.
Yeah, I think.
Because he's going to give you chances.
I mean, and I know this is a very generic statement that works for almost every game, but I think it's more appropriate for this game. I think if the Giants want to win in Philly, they better win the turnover battle.
Without question.
If they don't win the turnover battle, then they're in a lot of trouble.
It's going to be huge. Because Wentz will give you opportunities, mm-hmm. and you must get your hands on the ball and haul it in when it's there to be had. That's number one. Number two, with little – and he does a great job of spreading it around, too. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, he'll throw to every receiver.
He looks at the entire field sideline to sideline. Look, we talked about this last year. I know he was my favorite quarterback coming out.
He was mine, too. I'm with you. I would have picked him
first. He's good. But, folks, here's the good news, all right? The left guard, Sayamalu.
Well, he's been benched.
Okay, exactly. Why?
Their interior offensive line have struggled.
Because he has been a part of 4 sacks of the 8 that they have given up so far. It is likely going to be Chance Womack, who is a tackle by trade, who is going to, in all likelihood, I believe, play
Well, he's a guard.
Left guard for
he's
them.
A guard. He's a guard.
He's played guard, mm-hmm. but I think they were hoping to, let me see here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's my mistake. He was supposed to be the backup guard on the other side. He's swapping sides.
Got it.
Swapping sides. I knew there was something about to change. here's what I want to tell you, folks. Watching the Chiefs game, when the Chiefs rushed 4, Eagles could pass protect, and they could give Wentz everything that he wanted. When the Chiefs sent 5 or 6, especially between the tackles, all of a sudden, the deck of cards collapsed all over the table.
Yeah, the Eagles block well at the tackle spots. Jason Peters and Lane Johnson are good players, but they have been trying to fill those 2 guard spots, and Jason Kelce is a little undersized at center.
So, when you send, or at least based on the Chiefs tape, when you send 5 and 6 after the quarterback, you can cause them to short circuit. If I'm Spags, I believe in my guys in the backfield. I'm sending a ton of blitzes at him.
I'm saying,
hey, guess what, Eagles? Go ahead. I know he gets rid of the ball quick, but go ahead. That's what the Chiefs did. They had 6 sacks. 6 last week. Giants gave up 5. You thought that was ugly. How do you think Philadelphia fans feel about giving up 6 sacks to Kansas City?
Both the Eagles and Giants have allowed 8 sacks this year. So, there you have it.
Come at them with the kitchen sink and take your chances and see if Wentz will throw 2 or 3 picks for you.
And he might. All right, let's get to the phone calls, folks. 201-939-4513. Bob is in Pennsylvania in enemy territory. How are you, Bob?
Oh, believe me, I'm not the enemy. I hate those Eagles. I guess I want to make 2 points while I'm on the phone with you here.
Sure.
I want to address this, I guess, at Paul. I go back when I was barely driving. I was off to New Haven, Connecticut, to watch the Giants. That's when I was just so happy to have tickets. I did not care that they stunk so bad for all those years.
I went to Yale Bowl, too. I hear you.
There was one guy that was my favorite Giant, and I think Dalvin Tomlinson reminds me of him. Could you guess who I'm talking about?
You're thinking about John Mendenhall.
Absolutely.
Number 64.
Don't you think he's kind of built like him? He plays like him.
Yes.
Even facially, maybe even looks a little like him. But, and I think this Tomlinson is, just to open on a positive note, I think he is going to be one heck of a player, the way he stands in there and is hard to move out.
Yeah, and the reason you're saying that is because physically, Mendenhall was more stout. He was more like a fire hydrant. He was about 6'1".
He wasn't a 300-pounder, but nobody was as big back then.
Wow.
But
They're feeding these guys a lot of hay now.
I just think he's our defense, if everybody stays healthy, should be able to keep us in it. But we got to find a way to match up, and we don't match up with Philly. You got to somehow steal this game, because I'm going to Tampa next week, and if they're 0-3, season's over, let's face it.
Good for you to go to Tampa to follow your team. In fact, John and I have been there several times down to Florida, Jacksonville, Tampa, Miami.
There's always a very good Giants contingent. Well, Florida.
Yeah, well,
Florida's New York South.
I'm not going to Philly anymore, believe me. I'm actually out here in Western PA, but I know Tampa will be kind of like if we get off to a good start, the crowd will be behind them there.
Sure.
One other thing I wanted to bring up, I know you're going to probably take a deep sigh and say, what's he talking about? But
that's all right. Go ahead, Bob.
If you don't have a bottle of water you're dying of thirst, you would pay anything for that bottle of water. You've got to go to Cleveland. And they're not going anywhere. They know it. They would die to get a first-round draft pick. You got to get Joe Thomas.
Bob, Cleveland.
You got to move Flowers to the right side where he might be a decent player, and everybody won't be bashing him because now you're going to put him as a road grader in the run game.
Bob.
And we might have a good offensive line because I'm not impressed with Bobby Hart either. It's not just Flowers.
Bob, I promise you, if the Giants called up the Browns, in fact, I could get Sashi Brown on the phone right now. And I would do my best Jerry Reese imitation. I said, hey, Sashi, I'll give you one for Joe Thomas. Do you know what Sashi Brown's going to say? Thanks, but no thanks. Joe Thomas, because he doesn't want to be traded, and the Browns don't want to trade him.
They're not on the block.
They have a rookie quarterback that they're trying to groom there. You want to trade away his best protection at left tackle so he can't develop?
He's only got a couple years left, and Eli's only got a couple years left. It kind of makes sense.
No, it makes sense for the Giants. It doesn't make sense for the Browns.
Right.
Well, where are the Browns going this year?
Bob? They're not going anywhere this year, but again,
Bob,
hold on. Bob, let me just take the Browns' perspective here for one second.
Right.
Hugh Jackson's favorite player in that locker room is actually Joe Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
I know people who know Hugh Jackson. Joe Thomas is his favorite player. He is the example of everything he wants to make his team into.
A young team, by the way.
Okay? He wants Joe Thomas in that locker room for whatever years he's got left because he will be the guy who sets the foundation and the direction for all others to follow if the Browns are going to build something in the next 2 to 3 years. He told ownership and the GM, under no circumstances are you to part with Joe Thomas. I need him here to give me a chance to show these other guys what a real pro is.
And Joe Thomas has said he doesn't want to be traded, too.
And Joe Thomas has said that.
I believe you then.
Okay,
thank you,
Bob.
But I just got done watching the game film. I was at the game Monday, and I just got done watching. He can't play left tackle. He just doesn't have the foot speed. Go around the league and overpay, because otherwise Eli's not going to make it through this season. You can't help on both sides. You got the tight end to help on the right side, but what are we going to do about the left side?
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate the call, my friend. Good stuff. And I'm going to throw something else out here, too, because I actually looked at this because I listened to the last couple days of shows, and I expected some of the questions to come my way, and I read a lot of articles, the mailbags that all the beat writers do, and a very popular refrain is, just put Eric Flowers at right tackle and he'll be fine. Folks, let me get the schedule for you. Hold on 1 second. We're going to go through this, all right? We're going to talk some logic. Number one, Eric Flowers hasn't played right tackle in half a decade. That's number one. He hasn't practiced there. That's number two. Number three, next week, or let's start with this week, Paul, is the Eagles' best pass rusher lined up over right tackle or left tackle?
He's going to wind up on both. It won't matter. He's going to be over there, too.
No, but Brandon Graham is a left defensive end, so he's lined up over the right tackle more often than not, correct?
Correct.
Next week, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Is Golston a better pass rusher, or is Robert Ayers a better pass rusher? I think Robert Ayers is.
I would agree.
And he lines up over where? Right tackle. Okay, let's go to the San Diego Chargers. Where does last year's defensive rookie of the year that averaged that had 12 sacks line up?
Keep going.
He lines up over right tackle. Wow, how about that? All right, October 15th, Denver Broncos. You know who lines up over right tackle for the Broncos? The best pass rusher in football that just made Lael Collins look like a fool in the fourth quarter of last week's game against the Cowboys. He lines up over right tackle. And then hold on a second. The week after that, let's go to the Seattle Seahawks. Where does their best pass rusher line up? Wait, left defensive end, Michael Bennett. Where does he line up over? Oh, right tackle. So you're telling me that your plan to fix this thing is to move Ereck Flowers and have him line up one-on-one against Brandon Graham, Robert Ayers, Joey Bosa, Von Miller, and Michael Bennett. That's the idea. That's the idea?
I think you just killed all the phone lines.
201-93. I'm just saying, think about it for a second. This isn't, folks, this isn't the good, and this is something, a point that our folks over at Pro Football Focus make a lot, and it's a great point. The best pass rusher isn't always over the left tackle anymore.
No,
it's not like it was 5-10 years ago.
No.
J.J. Watt, by the way, you know where he lines up?
Everywhere.
But he lines up over right tackle more than he lines up over left tackle.
He does, but he's everywhere.
Correct. The point is that you can't hide somebody. Someone can either play or
hide somebody? Let me tell you something, folks. Defensive coordinators look at the tape. They see the weakest link in your fence. And that's where they send the possum through. Happens every single time.
Possum? Where'd you get the possum from?
Possums like to squirm through the hole in the fence.
But they're nocturnal.
Whatever. bottom line is, they will find the hole
they
in
will.
Your fence.
That is correct.
And they will make sure that they attack it.
That's all I'm saying. So I'm going to preempt any other Flowers to right tackle calls. Because if you call and you say that, I'm just going to say the names of five guys. And then I'm going to end the call.
So okay.
I'm just going to – you can talk about other stuff with the Flowers in the line. That's great. But if you call and send them to the right tackle, that's what I'm going to do. I'm warning you ahead of time. 201-939-4513. Our buddy Oren is down in Virginia. I haven't heard from Oren in a while. What's going on, buddy?
How you doing, John?
Doing great, Oren. What's up?
I'm not as excited like the rest of the fans are doing, but I actually believe that this game is going to really, like, the offensive line. I think if I was Ereck Flowers right now, I would be really angry. And I just want to, prove people wrong. And I feel like that he's going to – I feel like that line just all around is going to come out stronger. And I feel like Ben McAdoo is going to come up with a good game plan to help this rush, to help give Eli time and stuff. And I think the receivers, and I feel like Brandon Marshall especially, after that big drop he had, is going to come back and, start playing like Brandon Marshall, how he plays and stuff. And I feel like the defense is going to, pick up the game. Like, I'm really excited about this game because I just feel that momentum is about to shift to the Giants' side.
Oren, a lot of stuff for what you said sounds really, really nice, but I was of the belief that after 8 months of breaking his back and blood, sweat, and tears like you can't believe, Ereck Flowers worked his behind off this offseason.
He was here as much as anybody else between January and March last year before the players reported, and that's a fact.
Broke his back. We saw it. Mm-hmm. We saw him do what he did.
We haven't seen the results.
Lost
from it,
the weight, got himself in conditioning, gained strength, did the boxing lessons for his hands. And after the criticism and the voodoo dolls that have been hung around the entire New York metropolitan area with number 74 on their chests, you would think that after all that work, he would have come out like a house on fire against the Dallas Cowboys. And then after not having a great game, would have been triply angry to just absolutely smack people against the Detroit Lions. You would think that. It didn't happen that way. So what I'm saying to you is, I love your thoughts. Logic is there. Makes a lot of sense. But those things made sense the last 2 weeks, and it didn't happen. So what could possibly get him more angry to take it out on the Philadelphia Eagles if the last 2 weeks – weren't enough.
I feel like I know.
Is that
what,
fair?
I feel like I know what could help him. Honestly, just seeing him letting his team down. I just feel like even I know what you're saying and stuff, but I feel like just going two games, just starting off 0-2, and he knows he's one of the big reasons why. I feel like I don't know. Just something I don't know. I got this gut feeling.
We hope you're right, and hopefully,
sure.
And
be great,
and hopefully that happens. And thanks a lot for the call; we appreciate it. But I think we're in a situation now where show us.
Well, John, you know? Maybe no one in this room who does this program has defended Flowers and Hart's preparation more than me.
No, they haven't. That's
the
true.
The preparation.
That's true.
The was off the charts, and now as we see what the results are. I'm not gonna deny the results. The results have not been up to par.
And in fairness, I will say this about Flowers: we haven't actually seen him out there healthy yet either. He hurt his ankle the fifth play of the Cowboy game, was playing on half a leg.
Bobby Hart.
What did I say?
Flowers.
I meant Bobby Hart. Sorry.
Bobby Hart.
Yes.
Not fair to get on him as much because there are extenuating circumstances.
Correct.
Heck, he got hurt on the second play against Detroit.
Right.
But Eric Flowers, I have never seen a player do as much off-season prep since the new CBA came into effect. It was different in the old days, John. We used to see the guys around all the time. But since the new CBA has come into effect, I don't know that I've seen a guy prepare harder to try to improve his game than Eric Flowers did. And to this point, it has not provided fruit. It is incredibly disappointing. There's no question about that. And you'd like to believe that every time his quarterback gets hit or he looks at it on tape, you'd like to believe that his stomach is just turning upside down and he's not going to let it happen in the next game. We're two games in. When is that fire going to kick in? I don't know. I don't know now. I really don't.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phone to say what's up to Kashawn in Maryland. What's going on, Kashawn? How are you?
Hi, John. Long time no hear. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good, good. I wish I was calling under better circumstances, but
so
I haven't called in a while, and this is probably going to make you guys upset.
That's okay.
I have no confidence in this offensive line ability to beat the Eagles. I watched the game on Sunday between the Eagles and the Kansas City. Physical.
Is she lost?
Do I think she's back?
No, I'm here.
Okay, sorry, Kashawn. Kashawn, your phone was kind of cutting it out there. If you're on speaker, try to take yourself off speakerphone, okay?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm in my basement. I'm not on speaker. Let me move real quick. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
In my giant diva den.
No, that's okay.
Can you hear me better now?
Whoa. Giant diva den. I like that.
Yes.
That's cool.
It's decorated all in Giants paraphernalia. I have a Odell Beckham fat head. I have a Lawrence Taylor fat head. It's really good, but it's my giant diva den.
Very, very cool. Very cool. So take a snapshot of that.
Hold it. The Kansas City Chiefs. They're a physical team. I was at the Dallas game, and it's not just Flowers. It's the entire line. I mean, I've seen Weston Richburg has regressed. I've seen the defensive line was going right through them. Like, they're getting no push. And, Paul, your ideas were great about how, the game plan, and even with Philadelphia Eagles, they're making changes on their line because you said a tackle allowed five sacks. I'm not even confident that our coach, who's so arrogant, is going to make the necessary changes. The play calling is bad. He's not even putting this team in the best position to win. I mean, I don't see how, after scoring 10 points in two games, that we're just going to all of a sudden go into Philadelphia, who's already 13. Deeply in our psyche, and beat them. Like, I just, unfortunately, this is an organizational failure of years of offensive line neglect, and the chickens have come home to roost, and now we're screwed.
Kashawn, I understand your lack of confidence. You watch your team score one touchdown in the first two games. I understand why you would feel the way you feel about not feeling good about scoring points in Philadelphia. I get all that. What you have to hope is that the players are putting out there play a lot better. Because quite frankly, the last 2 weeks, the guys out there on the field, and you can go to every single position on the offense, go through it. No one is blameless here in terms of the players on the field. And you're right. And ultimately, the team is put together by the front office. It's coached by the coaches, and the players are out there on the field. So everybody in the organization will tell you, when the team loses, it's a group effort when they lose. And you're right. The bottom line,
John,
for this to get...
Thing,
yes,
one
go
last
ahead.
Thing, but sure. We've been talking about this since last year, John. This is not new. Ben McAdoo's play calling is not new. He's not even running the right plays. We played Detroit on Monday night. We're inside the 10. We get a first down. We're at the 2-yard line, if memory serves you correctly. And he decided to pass the ball. His play calling is bad. He's not allowing Eli to audible with these plays. Either there's nobody helping to chip. He's not even using
Hold on. I understand your frustration, and there are certainly instances where we could all point to and say we're not really sure, you know, what the reasoning was or why he was thinking that, because there are certainly other logical options. We would all agree about that. However, you can't say he's not giving Eli chances to change the play, because we know they are on the same page.
Yeah, and by the way, Eli,
that's not fair.
Kishon, Eli can change the play whenever he wants.
He can
still
even
has
change
that
the
freedom.
Protection.
Oh,
he talked about that yesterday.
He can, absolutely.
He was asked in the locker room, point blank, mm-hmm. Can you change the protection if you have to? And he said yes.
And we did see the second.
He can do it.
And we did see in the second half last week, Kishon, they did start to chip and help a little bit more with the tackles.
Right.
But the problem you run into then, in all honesty, unless the guys are chipping and then going out in a route, you're sending three or four receivers against seven defensive backs, and it's going to be very hard to get open in that situation. And one more thing before you say goodbye, Paul wants you to take a picture of your Giants diva den and put it up on hashtag Giants chat, okay?
Definitely do that.
Oh, I will.
Definitely
I will, absolutely.
Do that.
Thank
there
you, Kishon. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we definitely got to see this. Giants diva den. I don't know that I've ever seen one.
No, I don't think anybody's ever seen a Giants
so we
except
get,
for Kishon.
We got to get it on Twitter on hashtag Giants chat.
I haven't heard from Kishon in a while. It's good to hear her voice.
Yes.
Let's go to Leo down in Baltimore. Leo, you're up next on Giants.com. How are you?
Good. How you doing, guys?
Doing great.
Hi.
Leo. What's up?
Good. First time caller, long time listener. I just want to bring up 2 points real quick.
Go ahead.
Going back to last week on that punt return for a touchdown.
Yes.
Brad Wing missed that tackle. I feel like my grandmother could have made that tackle.
Oh, well, no, that's not – hey, look, Brad Wing missed the tackle, and he even made fun of himself on social media for making the tackle. But I will say this, Leo,
for
in
trying to make the tackle.
Right, correct. For
he thought he broke his ankle.
Exactly. And look, it was not a great attempt. No one will argue
that.
But, again,
right.
it's the returner who is one of the – you know, theoretically an elite athlete in the world – trying to get broken down by a punter in space to make a tackle. That is a very difficult play for any player to make, let alone a punter. So you're right, it was not a good attempt. We know that, but it was not an easy play. That's a difficult play for a punter to make.
I thought of the three missed tackles.
I just would have liked to see a little better effort.
There was effort there, but he's just not really capable of making that kind of play. He kicks the ball. He doesn't tackle players with it.
If you want to yell at somebody in that play, yell at Red Ellison.
I thought of the three tackles that were missed. Red Ellison was the guy who had the best shot at him, and that's disappointing because this is a guy who's a hardcore, blue-collar football player.
And it should be a core special teams player.
And he does everything, you know, with great gusto, and he did not wrap up and make that tackle that I thought he had the best shot at. That was the one that really bugged me. I don't think I'll ever get on a kicker who at least tries to be in the vicinity of the other guy and doesn't make the play. Now, if he runs the other way or doesn't even make an attempt to get over there, now I'll give him a hard time.
Right.
But if he at least is in the vicinity – no matter how gawky he looks,
right.
I'm not going
to
get on.
Leo, the whole job of the special teams is to not make the kickers have to make a play.
Yes, yes.
I understand that, right.
I think.
Second thing was with the offense. I mean, I know everybody's been negative about McAdoo. I saw one thing that I liked, and I think it's something they need to start doing more of. They designed that play where Evan Engram scored that touchdown.
That was a good design.
I think.
Very nice.
I think they need a scheme, you know, scheme better with the skill players we have. I think he needs to do a better job of putting plays together like that. You know, something where they didn't expect it and you're taking advantage of your weapons.
I am so glad you brought this up. And you know why? Because Travis Kelce ate them for lunch last week.
Travis Kelce killed the Eagles.
I think it was 8 catches for over 100 yards.
He did. And he, in fact, his big play was a deep pass where he beat Malcolm Jenkins one-on-one down the sideline.
Now, the Giants are lucky in that They've got two tight ends who I think are capable, but certainly Engram is much more capable of making a bigger play downfield.
Right, more speed.
But Ellison can catch the ball. We know that.
Sure.
So sure. they've got tight ends here who I really think could be a big factor against the Eagles. Again, Eli's got to be able to get it off. But without question, the Eagles are susceptible to the tight end. And that's got to be a big play for the Giants. I'm with you 100% on that one.
I mean, even with Odell and some, you know, with Shepard, I think you just need to do a little better job of scheming some of these plays. I mean, if you look at the Steelers and you look at what Belichick does, you know, he's got one to five plays a game where they got something set up to try to score a touchdown, you know, something disguised, something unexpected. I don't think we do enough of that.
Well, I tell you what, if with 4:40 to go the other night, Giants are trying to come back, and Eli throws that pass down to Engram right near the left corner of the goal line.
Right.
And you know, he gets down there. He's got the room. Eli drops the ball right in his hands, and then Slay comes over and knocks the ball away. That's a great defensive play, but I tell you what, the route was good. The throw was outstanding. And, hey, it's a seven-point game if he holds on to that ball with 4 minutes and 40 seconds to go. I don't know what happens. I'm not going to tell you the Giants win. I'm not going to tell you they even get to overtime. But I would sure like to have seen what would have happened had Engram been able to hold on to that ball.
Yeah, absolutely.
The play was there.
That drop right there, the drop by Marshall, we were a couple plays away from potentially taking over the game.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily go that far, but I mean, certainly
if the momentum started to go our way,
there were plays to be made. And that's the thing I think John and I want to stress to you. There will be plays to be made against the Eagles. They will be there. The Giants just must finish and make them.
Thank you, Leo. Appreciate the call.
Anyway.
201-939-4513. I'm thinking we might have a Giant fan trapped in Philadelphia right now, and that's Antonio.
Really?
He joins us next. Antonio, are you an Eagle fan calling in or a Giant fan calling in?
Giants fan.
You must be having a rough week down there, my friend.
Yes, I am.
What's on your mind today?
Well, remember, I want to talk to Paul.
Yes, sir.
Remember a couple of months ago, you were talking about how the Giants' offense will look like the Packers' offense?
Hasn't looked like it, has it?
No.
No.
And I think that's the problem right now. The Giants have gotten away from who they are as an organization. Giants are known for running the ball, controlling the clock, and playing good defense. I haven't seen that since last year or this season. And I'm going to give you a good example. If you take a look at the Dallas Cowboys and what Jerry Jones has done, he drafted a good offensive line, a good quarterback, a good running back, wide receiver, and tight end. Jerry Jones has a formula for winning, and for some reason, the Giants have gotten away from that formula of being a New York football Giant.
You know, Antonio, here's the thing. You know, we had a chance to talk to Ben McAdoo at a couple production meetings this offseason before the preseason games, and what you just said, that is how he wanted to try to win football games this year.
Yeah.
Now, the problem has been executing that plan. Clearly, they're last in the league in rushing, so that part hasn't worked, obviously. And frankly, and I think this has kind of escaped people. And understandably, because, you know, they've only scored 13 points in two games. I get it. People are focusing on the offense. But do people realize that the Giants' defense has gone from being the second-best rush defense in the league to being in the 20s, from being the third-best third-down defense in the league to being the 26th-best third-down defense in the league? So that you're right. The defense hasn't really held up its part of the bargain in that equation so far this year yet either. The points have been good, but some of the smaller periphery stats certainly are not at the level they were at last year.
For me, the big issue here is that as much as Ben does still want to rely on the defense.
Thank you, Antonio.
And he
appreciate
did want to get more of a running game going. There's no question that he wanted to bring a lot of the elements of the Packers offense to this team, and that's why they got the skill position guys they did. But here's the problem. The Giants offensive line has not nearly produced to the level that those Packers offensive lines produced at.
Well, okay. They've Bakhtiari and Balaga. excellent veteran tackles, who, by the way, are hurt.
And Lang was there for a while, too.
And by the way, look what happened to them last Sunday when they played the Falcons with those two starting tackles out.
Correct. So, in those days, that Packers offense that he may have taken a lot of pieces from had better production from the O-line and also had a mobile quarterback.
And that's where you took the words right out of my mouth.
Who could also add extra seconds to a play whenever the offensive line broke down. So now you have here an offensive line that's breaking down and a quarterback who can't save himself when water starts filling up his lungs.
I mean, how many times have we seen with the Packers, Rodgers go back to pass, have nothing on the initial read, and then he just runs around like a lunatic and makes some play that no other quarterback in the league could make? It happens all the time.
We heard during the playoff week last week from the Giants defenders who said, the Packers have a whole second group of route trees.
Oh, they do. Absolutely.
That they use once Rodgers breaks contain. It's almost like defending two full plays in one. They can do that because of his innate ability to get out and mobile and run and throw on the run. It adds a whole nother dimension to your game. He's a pocket passer, but he can also throw on the run. Well, when your offensive line is having trouble like the Giants are, and your quarterback is not one of those runners, he is not Fran Tarkenton, folks. That's what the Giants could really use to help bail out some of that water right now. If Fran Tarkenton was back there and scrambling for his life, and you old folks know what I'm talking about, late 60s, early 70s.
How about Jeff Hostetler for the more?
Even Jeff Hostetler for the younger folks. Yeah. Okay?
And they're still not that young.
All right. That's what would probably help some
right.
with a line that is springing leaks. And that's about, you know, the only way I could say it. I still think Ben wants to incorporate a lot of that Packer stuff, but he doesn't have the production to do it.
All right, I got three calls on the line. I'll get to all three of you, I promise. I want to get to a couple of tweets. I know we haven't gotten to them in a couple of days, so I want to get to them now. Here we go. Vic Fontana, John, the result of the defensive statistics is a byproduct of time of possession and continuous long drives. It's on the offense. Vic, that's part of it.
I don't disagree.
But when your third down percentage goes from 35% to 50%, part of that's the defense not going off the field. I can go back and calculate it. I haven't. What their average number of three and outs were per game last year, I promise you they're way down this year.
Yeah.
Three and outs per game by the defense.
Well, and
promise
quite
you.
Honestly, the turnovers,
right,
which were huge in the second half of last season, have not been really coming. They only got one so far.
If you're not getting takeaways and you're not stopping the run, you're going to have problems on defense. And you're not getting teams off the field on third down. By the way, that's one of the reasons they're not getting teams off the field on third down. Last year, you were in third and nine all the time because the run defense was so good. They're giving up 130 rushing yards per game this year.
What? I did not look at this. I'm sorry, folks. I've done a lot of homework.
Well, maybe I can look it up real quick. What do you got?
What is the Giants' rushing yards allowed in the fourth quarter of the two games?
Oh, boy. I don't know.
I know.
I don't have that.
But that
sorry.
Goes to his point
right.
that, you know, the Giants have held the ball for a combined total of less than 9 minutes in the two first quarters that they played?
That sounds about right.
They have, in the first quarters, folks, the Giants have had, I got the numbers here, 16 snaps total in the first quarter, 45 yards, which is 2.8 yards per play, three first downs, and 8 minutes and 28 seconds combined in two first quarters of play. That is 30 minutes of football.
And part of that's on the offense, obviously, for not getting first downs. But again, the defense has also allowed some very long drives in first quarters, too.
Well, and that's what Carl Banks said on first and 10. Again, you'll see that on MSG tomorrow. He said, okay, so if that's what's happening on offense, the defense has to say, we're going to kick it up two notches, and we're actually going to make sure we get three and out.
And that's what Ben McAdoo means by complimentary football.
Yes, yes.
When he says that in post-game shows. One thing from Vic Fontana on Evan Engram, he was more upset with his gesture in the end zone than he was the drop on the goal line. Vic, I'll only tell you what Evan Engram told us. He told us he didn't mean to do that. His hand didn't go there on purpose. It just kind of fell there, and that wasn't his intention to do it. You can believe that if you want to, or you can't. That's up to you.
Costly penalty.
It killed him.
Field position.
And by the way, this is another question that folks were going to have as to why the penalty got assessed the way it did.
Yes, actually, someone asked me that.
The reason the penalty got assessed the way it is, the rule, folks, does not state that when you kick the ball out of bounds, you place the ball at the 40-yard line. No. The rule states when you kick the ball out of bounds, the ball is placed 30 yards from where the ball was kicked.
Correct.
So in that situation, I guess the ball must have been placed, that was kicked off from the 25, right? That
yes.
sounds right?
Yes.
So take 30 yards from there. That's how you get to the 45-yard
yes.
line. There we go. I don't have the answer to this. Maybe you do. Is Ingram still on the protocol? That's from Luis Cristantilo.
Do not know, other than the fact he was out there in the media portion. And again, once they close practice to the media, we have no idea
right.
what they're going to do.
So we'll find out after practice.
We'll have to find that out.
At Giants VAE, why don't we bring more guys in motion on offense? That would stop us from being so predictable. Your thoughts on that? Do you think motion would achieve that?
I'd be more interested in some different personnel groupings, as I said earlier in the show, than I would motion.
Ben Gruen makes the point from Kashawn's call that the Giants haven't neglected the offensive line. They've drafted two guys in the first round and one player in the second round over the last 4 years. That's absolutely true. Now, have the results, we'll see, but that doesn't mean they didn't put resources into it. When you draft three guys in the first and second round in 4 years, you're putting resources
into
it.
And we've talked about that before. The question is, was that enough? That's the bigger question.
Correct. Let's see. Nope. That looks like all the ones for now. I'll scan again before we wrap up the show, folks. But that's what we got for now on hashtag Giants Chat. You did a good job. Thanks for joining us today. We got 8 more minutes and 3 more calls. Let's go to Amari down in Atlanta. What's up, Amari?
Hey, fellas. I've been listening to you guys for a year.
Thank you.
I'm calling in.
Appreciate it.
Hi.
Yeah, so I just have two statements and two quick questions I'll take off there. Mm-hmm. But one, I've been a Giants fan since Eli came into the league, and he's all I know at quarterback. And, you know, like for him, like 14 seasons,
yep.
Never missing a game. Dude is an Iron Man, always getting abused like on and off the field by like other players in the media. Handles it with pure composure. Like, the fans call in and they're heated, but, you know, we're really going to miss him when he's gone. So just all the praise to Eli. Other thing, like, the expectations for this season were set so high, and, you know, it's unfortunate that we're not living up to that. But, you know, our personnel is still the same. Like fans just have to, like, be confident that we have the players to make it happen, and just trust that, you know, players are going to execute better, and, you know, don't lose faith in our guys, and don't get on the radio and just start like screaming at you guys on Big Blue Kickoff, because you're just here to sort of calm us down, and it doesn't do much good if everyone's yelling at each other.
Hey, Omari, I get it, though. Look, fans are upset. If they want to call in and be upset and yell and be angry, I understand that. You love the team. You spend a lot of time loving the team. I get you being upset. That's okay.
And you know what? If you vent like that to your family, they probably will disown you. So you're better off trying to vent to us. I will say this, though, and what I'm really appreciative of, the best callers that we have are ones that take the time to sort through the hype, sort through the headlines, and try to really understand and learn what's happening. And then if they have complaints or they have things they don't like, I love when they come to us with, hey, could they try this? Is this a possible solution? Do you know, does this make sense? Could they do that? Because I've always been of the opinion that if somebody's going to be very upset and be very negative about something, the most productive thing you could do is at least offer a suggestion about what to do.
A realistic suggestion.
Well, that's what we're here for, is to try
right.
to to try to discern if the suggestion, like Joe Thomas trade, no, that's not realistic.
Right.
That's
not going to happen. There isn't a left tackle on the street that you're going to find here that's going to be a panacea.
I mean, there are 75% of the teams in the NFL, trust me, who would like to upgrade their offensive line right now.
Yes.
And if there was a tradable guy out in the marketplace, there'd be a bidding war with a bunch of teams trying to get a trade going to get that guy.
Have you watched – guys, I know you think – and Amari, do you have one more question or are you good?
Two quick questions.
Go ahead, real fast. Yes.
One, personnel packages. We have all these great tight ends. It's confusing to me why we aren't running more 12 personnel.
Okay.
And just having tight ends like chip on like every play.
What's
like,
number
give
two?
The line help.
I would like to see more of that. I agree with you.
Number two, the running plays, we're running Darkwood to the outside and Perkins up the middle. Why not switch that? Have the shifty guy running outside and have the bigger, meatier guy up the middle. And with that, I'll take it up there.
Thanks, Amari.
Thanks for the call, guys.
I would not mind seeing him give the ball to Perkins with some more space. I feel like he hasn't had a lot of room to use his quickness like I would like him to be able to.
I'd have to go back and log him, but
I haven't done that either.
I think he's been between the tackles on most plays.
That's what it seems like.
Rarely
right?
been getting to the edge at all. And Darkwa, the few snaps he's had, I think he's been both in and out from what I can recall.
Sure. But I think the bigger issue, though, is that Perkins hasn't been outside.
Perkins is a guy who does need some room to operate. Let's not kid ourselves.
He's not going to put his head down and, like, push the pile three or four yards. That's not what he does.
Folks, I spent the entire offseason saying to you, I'd like to get a power run game going, and I'd like to get a power back in here. So now if you're going to complain to me that you don't have a power back to push the pile, I'm not going to be able to really deal with that.
And by the way, and the point I was going to make before I let Amari finish was that I know you guys think the Giants' offensive line is struggling. Next time the Seattle Seahawks are on TV,
whoa,
turn it on, and you'll see what I mean.
Yeah, Russell Wilson's running for his life.
Every play.
Yep.
And if they didn't have Russell Wilson, who, by the way, his throwing motion looks a little weird to me. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a little banged up in the shoulder area. They would have no chance of scoring any points ever.
Legs are doing it all.
If you put Eli Manning behind the Seahawks offensive line, he'd be dead. He would be 6 feet under. He'd be injured by now. That's how bad it is in Seattle.
And, folks, just know the league is full of suspect offensive lines.
And we've been through this
all
before,
you need to know.
The way the colleges coach them, you know, CBA, all
Many
that
reasons.
Stuff together.
Many reasons.
All right, Lisa in Brooklyn, she's up next. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, John. How are you? Hi, Paul.
Hi.
What's up?
How are you?
Great.
Good afternoon.
Yes,
good afternoon.
You too.
I was just going to touch on what the other caller just said about Darkwa and Perkins, because I, too, Paul, like you, believe in a power back, and yeah. I think we miss it terribly. But that game with the Lions, when we were on the line, we were going in, and they used Paul Perkins, I believe it was, on one play. I somehow think Darkwa might have got in. Darkwa, to me, when he runs, he seems like he pushes the line a little bit more. I agree, Perkins looks more like a finesse kind of back, like to move around to the side. What's your opinion on that, that play?
Yeah, look, Darkwa plays like a power back. He doesn't quite have the size or the frame or the bulk to be it.
But he's that one step,
though. But he does play more like a power back than any other Giant running back, okay? So he's about the best they're going to do if you want to replicate that style of running game. My issue, again, you're getting down there inside the 3-yard line, the 2-yard line, just go jumbo package. And yeah, Dark was the best power guy they got. Go jumbo package and ram it in. All right? That's it. Just go jumbo and punch people in the mouth. That's what I would do.
I agree.
But, you know, I'm old school.
They might have got in with him because he had that 11-yard run. And I see when he runs, I watch him, he does seem to push the line a little bit more. I mean, he's not a Brandon Jacobs. He's not a Marshawn Lynch, but he's got more of that power style.
Look at it this way. Okay?
Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate the call.
In that spot, John, if you got the ball at the 3-yard line, give me 3 shots with any combination of beef you want back there. You want to put DJ Fluker at fullback as a jumbo package, or put him as the 6th offensive lineman.
That's why you have Shane Smith.
Ellison.
Shane Smith.
Shane Smith. Put as much beef as you can on the field and give me 3 shots from the 3-yard line. If you can't get it in from there doing that, come on.
And frankly, Paul, I don't mind that even if they wanted to go 4 wide or 3 wide and have one tight end and Dark one there to spread the defense out a little bit to get fewer guys in the box and then run a, you know, power lead play with Darkwa, I'd be okay with that too. That's fine.
But the new NFL doesn't like that play.
Mark,
the new NFL wants to wing it.
Mark in Chicago will be our final call. Hey, Mark, how are you, buddy?
All right, glad to be cleanup today.
Yeah, absolutely.
A couple comments about some things in the show, and then I have my primary question.
Sure.
First of all, I think people ought to lay off Engram a little bit. He's a rookie. He didn't secure that pass as good as he should have. But, you know, the other team gets to play too, and the guy Slay made a good play on that.
So he really
it wasn't
crunched
a drop.
Him.
It got
crunched
hit out
him.
Of his hands. So crunched. I think we need to refocus on that a little bit.
That's fair. Yeah, Mark, you're right. He could have caught it better, but it was a very good defensive play. Agreed. Yeah.
The point that really is being made about that play is that it was there.
And by the way, Ingram did say that he was not looking for the safety. He did not know the guy was coming, so I guess it kind of caught him by surprise.
But the issue is that the play was there, that Eli had enough time to throw it. He made the proper
throw. And the guy was open.
And the receiver, or in this case the tight end, was able to find the hole in the defense. So the play was there to be made. That's more the point than ripping the rookie for getting the ball ripped out by a huge cannonball hit.
Right. And the other quick comment, John, you mentioned the word hope before. I spent 35 years in sales, had probably 20 sales managers, and he always said to me, hope is not a strategy. So those four-letter word does not give me a lot of confidence going forward.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. No argument.
Okay. But the last thing I wanted to focus in on is sort of to follow up on what Kashawn was talking about earlier. I don't have a lot of confidence in Ben McAdoo in his play calling, his formations, his run-pass mix, his time management. So, Paul, when you talk about the aggressive play calling, using the fullback tight end on every play, I don't see where we're going to see that unless we have somebody else calling the plays. John, last week I think you were talking about the script. To me, the script is not right. We need a new script writer. And with that, I'll listen to the end of the show online. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
I'm going to make this short and sweet. I've said this on WFAN, and I'll say it here. Philosophically speaking, there are very few head coaches who double as offensive coordinators calling plays in the league right now. Very few. Sean Payton's one. McCarthy's another.
Andy Reid.
Andy Reid's another. There is a handful of them, okay?
I believe the Redskins, too, right? Isn't Gruden doing it this year because
McVay
left?
Yes. I think he is. The point is, over the last dozen years or so, let's just say, there have been very few in the league who have done it. I believe the league has gotten extremely complicated. I think there are so many sub-packages, so many individual things you have to worry about as a head coach on the sideline. It would be my philosophical preference for the job to be split. I've felt that way all along. This is a system and a philosophy that I believe in. Ben McAdoo's the head coach. He has the right to make the decision. He believes in his system.
And
he believes in his philosophy. He's entitled to do it.
And it will be his decision, by the way. He said that at the press conference yesterday.
He absolutely did.
Correct.
So I will say this. Philosophically, I'd like to see the job split. But this is not a personal preference on me against Coach McAdoo. It's simply a philosophical decision that I believe the job should be split. And that's what I'm going to give you.
And I'll just add this. I think in the past, when guys have done both jobs, the issues have come in game management. The guys are so obsessed with calling plays that time management, things like that become an issue. And that hasn't necessarily been an issue for the Giants under Ben McAdoo. So
I will say this.
I'll put
John,
out that out there, too.
Because of the massive substitutions that they have now in the specialists, and because, by the way, coaching staffs years ago used to be 6, 7, 8 guys on a coaching staff. Now there's like 15 guys on a coaching staff. There is so much to juggle, so much to manage in today's NFL. It's just, again, lift that burden off your shoulders and split it. That would be my philosophical opinion.
You also have a lot of people to help you then, too. 201-939-4513. Great job on the phones, folks. We appreciate you calling in. Hashtag Giants Chat. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Everybody have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com as we get closer to Giants and Eagles Sunday, 1 o'clock, in the city of brotherly love. Have a good one, everybody.